गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धरि। यशोरानन्दन गज जन रंजन यमुना तीरवन चारि। यशोरानन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरवन चारि। His Divine Grace, Isi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru Rangoram. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, text, chapter 17, text 15 and 16. So text 15. Translation, Shukadev Goswami said, in the tract of land known as Ilavrita Varsha, the only male person is Lord Shiva, the most powerful demigod. Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, does not like any man to enter that land. If any foolish man dares to do so, she immediately turns him into a woman. I shall explain this later in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, there's a story there in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam with King Sudumna. The story begins with Manu. One of the Manus was wanting to have a son who can then take over rulership of the universe. And he didn't have a son. He only had a daughter, I think. So in order to get a son, he asked his priest, Vasishta, if he can do a sacrifice, like some kind of yajna, so that he could have a son. So they did some kind of sacrifice, and right before the priest who was in charge of the offering oblations to the sacrificial fire, right before he was about to offer oblations, Manu's wife, whose name was Shraddha, she requested that priest in charge of the offering oblations as if they could have a daughter instead of a son. So Manu wanted a son. Manu's wife wanted a daughter. So when the priest was offering the oblations, he had that in mind that, okay, they're wanting a daughter. So then they ended up getting a daughter whose name was Ila, I think. So Manu was wondering what happened, so he went to Vasishtha and said, "Hey, I thought we were doing the sacrifice so that I can get a son, not a daughter." So Vasishtha said, "Okay, all right. So now I'll. Sorry, I think I know what happened. Whatever. We'll, by my mystic power, we'll turn your daughter into a male." So he did that, and now Manu has now a son whose name is Sudyumna. So Sudyumna, he used to, he then became king after some time, and he used to go hunting in the forest with his soldiers, and he went to, he was hunting in Ilavritavarsha, where Lord Shiva stays, and he was in a forest there, and all of a sudden he turned into female. All the horses that he was on turned into mares, and all the soldiers turned into females, and they all became very morose in this forest of Shiva, and they were wondering what happened. So Shukadeva Goswami was telling this to Parikshit Maharaj, and then when Parikshit Maharaj heard this, he's like, "Really? How did that happen?" You know, all of a sudden they just, you know, he interrupted Shukadeva Goswami, who was narrating the story, and he wanted to know, how did they turn into women when they went into this forest? So then Shukadeva Goswami narrated how before that there were a bunch of sages who went to go see Shiva, great sages and munis, and they entered the same forest, and this is place where Lord Shiva enjoys with his wife, Parvati. So the sages happened to enter at a time when they were engaging in, you know, whatever, sexual affairs, amorous pastimes. And, okay, they might have realized that they came at a bad time, so they took their leave and they went to ashram of Naranarayana. But Parvati was quite embarrassed because, you know, so in order to kind of please his wife, Parvati, Lord Shiva declared that, okay, anybody who enters this forest will become a female. So this is what is described here. This is the background of that little description later in the ninth canto. And then also later in that story, Sudyumna, because now he's a female, but Manu still wanted a son. And Vasishtha, who made the arrangement for Sudyumna to be a male, he didn't really want Sudyumna to be a female. So Vasishtha asked Lord Shiva, "Hey, Lord Shiva, you turned Sudyumna into a female, but I went through all this effort to make him into a male, and now he's back to a female. Can you do something?" So Shiva said, "Okay, all right, we'll allow him, we'll have him be a male 1 month, and then the month after that he'll be a female, and then the month after that he'll be a male, and like that he'll alternate being a male and a female throughout his reign as king of the world." So he thought that was okay. Sudyumna thought that was okay, but the citizens didn't like that very much. They didn't like a male and a female ruler going back and forth. So anyway, after some time, it turns out that when Sudyumna was a female and he was in this forest of Ilavritavarsha, the moon, the son of the moon god, whose name was Buddha, got very attracted to Sudyumna, the female, and they ended up, I don't know, having a son named Pararava or something. And anyway, so after some time, Sudyumna stopped ruling and his son Pararava became the king, and that's the end of the story. So that's in the ninth canto. So I guess from that story we can learn that we're not this body, that even though he's a male and a female, he's still the same person, even if he's in a different body. So generally the bodily identification is very, very strong. You know, we tend to identify as being a male or a female or this nationality or this ethnic group quite strongly. Like one time, I think Vidyananda Maharaj was speaking with somebody in South America, and Maharaj was explaining they're like some aristocratic family or something. He was explaining to them that, you know, you're not this body, that you're a spirit soul. And this lady was like, yeah, but I'm a female spirit soul. Not in the spiritual sense, but in the material sense. Like, yeah, okay, I might be spiritual, but I'm female. Like, she didn't have. anyway, so like that, it's deep rooted, this conception of bodily identification. Okay, so next verse, text 16. Translation: In Ilavrita Varsha, Lord Shiva is always encircled by 10 billion maidservants of Goddess Durga, who minister to him. The quadruple expansion of the Supreme Lord is composed of Vasudev, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarsana. Sankarsana, the fourth expansion, is certainly transcendental, but because his activities of destruction in the material world are in the mode of ignorance, he is known as Tamasi, the Lord's form in the mode of ignorance. Lord Shiva knows that Sankarsana is the original cause of his own existence, and thus he always meditates upon him in trance by chanting the following mantra. Purport: Sometimes we see a picture of Lord Shiva engaged in meditation. This verse explains that Lord Shiva is always meditating upon Lord Sankarsana in trance. Lord Shiva is in charge of the destruction of the material world. Lord Brahma creates the material world, Lord Vishnu maintains it, and Lord Shiva destroys it. Because destruction is in the mode of ignorance, Lord Shiva and his worshipable deity, Sankarsana, are technically called Tamasi. Lord Shiva is the incarnation of Tamaguna. Since both Lord Shiva and Sankarsana are always enlightened and situated in the transcendental position, they have nothing to do with the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. But because their activities involve them with the mode of ignorance, they are sometimes called Tamasi. So when we speak of Lord Shiva, we get into some kind of intricate tattva. He's kind of in his own category. Because he plays various roles. He plays the role as a demigod. As we can see here, he's in charge of the mode of ignorance. Well, he's also known as Ashutosh, who's easily pleased and easily angered. And since he performs the function of a demigod, he is kind of obliged to give benedictions, even to demons. So there's just as long as whoever's worshiping Lord Shiva in a particular kind of way and is pleasing Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva's kind of, he gives the benediction according to that particular form of worship. So he plays that role as a demigod. But because he's in charge of the mode of ignorance, specifically like in charge of destruction, when it's time to destroy the world, he plays on his Dumaru drum and he dances, and he dances the Pralaya dance or something, and all the universe is destroyed. So because he's in charge of the mode of ignorance, particularly destruction, we see that sometimes Lord Shiva is seemingly maybe affected by the modes, or sometimes he makes mistakes. Sometimes it seems that way. For example, there's the pastime of Vrikasura. Vrikasura was this demon who was very power hungry, who he just wanted power. So he used to perform these kind of insane austerities where he used to cut off pieces of his flesh and he used to offer it into a fire trying to please Lord Shiva, and so that he can get some kind of benediction. And then right as Vrikasura was about to, like chop off his own head and offer it in the sec, give up his life in order to try to please Shiva so that he can get a benediction, Shiva said, "All right, what do you want?" He appeared. And then he asked him kind of like a stupid benediction where he wanted to have the power that whatever he touched, whatever head he would touch, it would just crumble into like a lot of pieces. So his head would explode. So Lord Shiva said, okay. So then he gave him the benediction. And then after Vrikasura got this benediction, he decided that he wanted Parvati, Lord Shiva's wife. So he decided, okay, well, I got this power now, let's see if it works. So he went to see if he could try to use it on Lord Shiva, because he was like an obstacle for him getting Parvati. So then Lord Shiva was, gave him this power, and now he's going to want to use it on me. So then Lord Shiva started running, and Vrikasura started chasing after him, and Vrikasura was actually keeping up with him. Like, he was following behind him, like, and he was keeping up. So Lord Shiva didn't know what to do, so he went to Lord Vishnu to see if he can help out. And Vishnu said, okay, and he turned into, like, this little Brahmana boy or something, and when Vrikasura was coming by, Lord Vishnu stopped him and said, hey, what are you doing? And Vrikasura said, oh, Lord Shiva gave me this boon, this benediction that whoever head I touch will explode. So I wanted to try it out on him. And Lord Vishnu, as Brahmana, said, oh, Shiva, he gives out these benedictions that don't really work sometimes. You know, I wouldn't really believe that benediction really is, you know, really will do anything. I think it doesn't really work. So, in fact, you could even try it on yourself. You'll see that nothing will happen. So, you know, go ahead and touch your own head. You know, you'll see. And then, I don't know, somehow he was bewildered and charmed by Vishnu or whatever. And so he touched his own head and his head exploded, and that's the end of Vrikasura. So then after that, Vishnu says, don't give out these benedictions anymore. So anyway, that's seeming mistake, I guess. But there's also another story with Lord Shiva. It's probably one of my favorite stories. When I was in high school reading the Krishna book for the first time, there's this one story that stood out to me as being kind of cool. This was the story of Banasura. So Banasura is this very dear devotee of Lord Shiva. He's got... Because he did so many things to try to please Lord Shiva, Banasura got, you know, powers from Lord Shiva. He got 1,000 arms, and he became very, very, very powerful. In fact, he actually used these 1,000 arms to play on the drum very rhythmically when Shiva does his Tandava Nitra dance or something. So he's got that service for Lord Shiva to play on the drums with 1,000 arms. But so Banasura, he asked Lord Shiva for the benediction to always remain in his city and protect his city. So therefore Lord Shiva was trying to, like, help his devotees, so he decided to stay in that city. Then one time, anyway, there's a whole, like, involved story about how Banasura's daughter, her name was Usha, had a dream and wanted to marry the grandson of Krishna, Aniruddha. So Usha's friend, whose name was Chitraleka, who had mystic powers, said, okay, I'll go get the man of your dreams and I'll bring him to you. And Usha wanted to marry this Aniruddha because she had a dream. And although she's never seen Aniruddha before, but she had a dream with Aniruddha as being her husband and her long cherished person whom she wanted to marry and everything. So, but she was kind of confined to the palace of Banasura, so she couldn't really go out and see him. So Chitraleka knew some mystic arts, and she somehow got Aniruddha from the Yadu family and brought Aniruddha to Banasura's palace. And anyway, so Aniruddha and Usha, they were enjoying nicely in the palace of Banasura. Then one day Banasura found out, like, who, my daughter is associating with some man inside my palace? You know, this is not right. So then he found out and he got really, really angry, and he decided to, you know, try to attack Aniruddha. Although inside, Banasura kind of liked Aniruddha because he was so beautiful, and he's like Cupid, I guess. I think he's playing the role of like Cupid or something. And very, very beautiful grandson of Krishna, and like Usha couldn't have picked a better match, Banasura was thinking. But because it was not proper for her to associate with him like that, he felt like he should do something about it. So he attacked Aniruddha. And Aniruddha, he kind of assumed a fighting position. He grabbed an iron rod, and he was about ready to fight with Banasura's armies. And so he did, and Aniruddha kind of cleaned house. He kind of defeated all of Banasura's army. But Banasura was really, really powerful, so he knew the art of, like, arresting people. So he somehow arrested Aniruddha. And Aniruddha was in Banasura's prison for 4 months or something. So Krishna and the Yadu family, they were wondering where Aniruddha was. Where is Aniruddha? And Narada Muni came. You know, of course, he's always there to make things interesting. And Narada Muni explained to them, well, Aniruddha went over to the kingdom of Banasura and is in Banasura's jail. So Krishna and Balaram and the Yadu army, and the Yadu dynasty and the army all went to the kingdom of Banasura to try to attack it. So many phalanxes of soldiers and everything just to get Aniruddha back. And so then Banasura, who's really, really powerful, he's like, okay, bring it on. So then there's like this huge, huge war going on, a huge war about ready to start between Krishna, and Balaram was there, and all the armies on Krishna's side, and then all the Yadu family, and then Banasura. And then because Lord Shiva decided to stay in Banasura's city and protect the city, Lord Shiva was on Banasura's side. So I thought this was really interesting. You know, Lord Shiva versus Krishna and Balaram in a fight. That must have been a pretty fun thing to watch. So, in fact, this attracted the attention of many demigods and sages, and everyone wanted to come and see this because this was pretty amazing. Lord Shiva is very, very powerful. Krishna, you know, Krishna's Krishna, and Balaram was there, and Krishna, Shiva had these ghost armies, and it was the description of the battle was kind of intriguing. So, Lord Shiva was throwing all these weapons at Krishna, and Krishna was counteracting them. Like, Lord Shiva threw a hurricane weapon, and Krishna threw a mountain weapon. Lord Shiva threw a Brahmastra weapon. Krishna counteracted it with the Brahmastra weapon. And like this, they were just going back and forth. And Balaram was fighting with someone, like the Kumbha, or, you know, whoever was on the other side and tearing him to pieces. And like that, there's this like really big battle going on. And then, so we know that Krishna doesn't lose battles, so he became apparent that Shiva was losing the fight. Lord Shiva and Banasura were losing the fight against Shiva, or against Krishna and Balaram. So kind of as like a desperate measure, Lord Shiva decided that he would release his most powerful weapon called the Shivajvara. I think, yeah, the Shivajvara, which is the weapon that's released when the universe is destroyed. Let's describe that: when the sun gets 12 times hotter, and or something, then the universe like gets destroyed or something. So that same weapon called the Shivajvara personified, he released that to fight against Krishna. And so the Shivajvara is like this three-headed fiery creature meant to destroy everything. It's very, very powerful, like practically the most powerful weapon. And there's really only one weapon that can kind of deal with this Shivajvara, and that was Krishna's weapon, the Narayanajvara. So the Shivajvara is kind of depicted as kind of like this intense heat, fire personified, and then the Narayanajvara is like intense coldness personified. And then so the Narayanajvara was fighting the Shivajvara, and they were going back and forth. And because the Narayanajvara is stronger, the Shivajvara kind of gradually reduced in strength. And then Prabhupada said in the Krishna book that when there's excessive heat, we can tolerate. It's, you know, it's not as big of a deal. But when there's excessive cold, everything is finished. You can't do anything. It's just too intense. So, in fact, I remember when I was in high school, sometimes you get into these frivolous conversations about stupid things like, what would you rather prefer, being in having a hotter temperatures or colder temperatures? You know, I don't know, whatever. And then everybody shares their preferences, and it's a useless conversation. So I remember I used to say, well, I guess I prefer hotter temperatures, because I was thinking of this particular pastime when I was talking with my friends in high school. Like, yeah, I think I'd prefer hotter temperatures because, and then I was in my mind, I was thinking because the Narayanadvara is pretty stronger than the Shivadvara. In fact, every time it's freezing cold outside, I remember that story because it's so, the cold is so intense that, okay, this could be a weapon of Lord, you know, Krishna. So anyway, the Shivadvara, he was diminishing in strength, and he just kind of had to surrender to Krishna, and he offered really nice prayers, and everything was pacified. But Banasura, he was kind of, earlier in the battle, Banasura approached Krishna trying to fight him, and Krishna very easily, you know, kind of used his arrows and easily, like, I don't know, broke all of Banasura's bows and kind of got him somehow out of commission, so he was kind of down and out. And then that's when the Shivadvara came, and they had their little battle, and then after some time, after Shivadvara lost and was offering the prayers, Banasura kind of regained his strength or whatever, and he was still very angry, so he wanted to charge Krishna. So then Krishna pulled out his Sudarshan chakra and started chopping off his Gosan's arms one after another, like a gardener trimming a tree or something, very easily. And then Lord Shiva, because Banasura is his devotee, and Lord Shiva promised that he would protect him, Lord Shiva pleaded with Krishna, you know, please spare my devotee. And then Krishna spared him, and Krishna said that, yeah, I wasn't planning on killing him. I was just planning on chopping off his arms to remove his pride. Because I had made a promise earlier that I wouldn't kill anybody in Prahlad's family. I guess Banasura appeared in the dynasty of Prahlad. So Krishna said that he wouldn't kill anybody in that dynasty on Prahlad's request. So anyway, so Banasura's pride was removed. Because Banasura was actually, when you have so much power, like Banasura had a lot of power, he actually wanted to use his power to fight with somebody. But there was nobody around who could fight with him because he was so powerful that anybody who approached him, they just ran away. Okay, you have 1,000 arms. I'm not going to fight you. But because he has this power, he has to use it. So he used to just take out his frustration or whatever because of not being able to use his power. And he used to just pulverize mountains and turn them into dust. So he was really excited, actually, to be able to fight with Krishna. Finally, someone I can fight with. Even though he knew he was going to lose, he knew ahead of time because Shiva said, Krishna's going to come and he's going to kill you. And he said, oh, great, you know, I was wanting this. So, yeah, that's what happens. The more, like, power that you have that you're not using for Krishna's service, like, the quicker you go down. I don't know. Like if you have all this power and you're not using it for the service of Krishna, it actually only leads to frustration and only brings you down. So that's one role of, another role of Shiva's being like a demigod. And he's also known as the greatest Vaishnava. In the end of the Bhagavatam, there's this verse that says, of all the rivers, the most purifying river is the river Ganges. And of all forms of Krishna, Achyuta Krishna is the most beautiful. And of all the Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva is the best. And of all scriptures, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the best. So Lord Shiva is considered, you know, the greatest Vaishnava. Why is he considered the greatest Vaishnava? Because he gives the lowest, most degraded living entities the chance for the highest thing. You know, he wants to see everybody engaged in Krishna's service, even those in the mode of ignorance or the ghosts and goblins and whoever Shiva deals with, he tries to uplift them. And we also see here that Lord Shiva, he meditates on the form of the Lord, like Sankarshan. And there was one incident when Lord Shiva, this was right after the churning of the milk ocean with the demigods and the demons. So the demons and the demigods, they were churning this big, huge mountain. From this pastime, there was one form of the Lord, very attractive form of the Lord, known as Mohini Murti, came out and stole the nectar away from the demons and gave it to the demigods. So this is the only female form of the Lord. So Lord Shiva heard about this pastime, and he really, really wanted to see this form of Mohini Murti. So Lord Shiva approached Vishnu and said, "Hey, I heard about this Mohini Murti form. I heard it was really attractive. I want to see it. Can you show me?" And then Vishnu said, "Yeah, this form of mine is most appreciated by those who are very lusty. So, but since you asked, I will show you." So then Vishnu assumed a form of Mohini Murti, the very young, attractive female form, and she was, playing with a ball or something in a very like attractive way, and her hair became loose and garments became loose, and she was like laughing, and she was doing a lot of things to like just attract anybody. So at one time the ball kind of went away from her, and so she was running after it, and then a breeze came and blew off her clothes, and then Shiva just kind of lost it, and he just went chasing after Mohini Murti like a male elephant chasing after a female elephant or something. He just couldn't do anything about it. It was just too attractive, and even though he was with his wife at the time, so he left his wife and just went after Mohini Murti. And then Mohini Murti, you know, acting ashamed that her clothes flew off, she's like running away, hiding behind trees and things, and Lord Shiva was running after her. At one point, Lord Shiva grabbed Mohini Murti by the hair and tried to embrace her, but she like squirmed out and ran away some more. Anyway, there's other further descriptions. I was reading this earlier about, I guess it's okay to say, like Lord Shiva was, he was like so aroused that he was like losing his semen everywhere, and when he was losing his semen, like those places turned into like gold mines and silver mines and everything. Anyway, at one point, Lord Shiva kind of realized that, whoa, I'm completely overcome now. And he kind of came to his senses after chasing after this Mohini Murti for so long that he just kind of came to his senses and said, wow, Krishna's energy, you know, Yogamaya is very powerful. And he kind of came to his senses and kind of, I don't know, realized what he was doing. And then Mohini Murti transformed back into Vishnu. And anyway, so Vishnu is saying that, yeah, nobody can, everybody, it's so difficult. My energy is so difficult to overcome that it attracts everybody. Only you could do something like, you know, Lord Shiva like could like withstand any kind of what he could withstand that energy, at least to some degree. So anyway, so Krishna's energy is very powerful, so we need to be careful when we're dealing with Krishna's energy. So I guess that's all I can really say about this right now. Would anyone like to add anything about this or anything? Okay, well, And the only other thing I know about Lord Shiva is that he appeared as, I mean, well, he actually, I guess when a Advaitacharya, who's one of the Panchatattvas, he was considered to be like kind of like an incarnation of Mahavishnu and Sadashiva, which is, I think, is like the glance of Vishnu. So I don't know if it's exactly like Shiva, like the way we know of Shiva, but so Shiva kind of maybe kind of appeared as Advaitacharya. And because of Advaitacharya, because Advaitacharya saw the condition of Kali Yuga going on, and he saw how degraded people were becoming, and he, one point, because he's Vishnu, he was about ready to bring out his chakra and just start cleaning house with all the residents of Kali Yuga, because they were just so degraded, like, what else to do? And then, but then he thought twice, and then he thought, okay, well, instead of that, maybe I could ask Krishna to come and to deliver these people. So then, because of Advaitacharya's intense compassion and mercy, he you know, called out very loudly for Krishna to appear in Kali Yuga as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So because of Advaitacharya's mercy and him wanting to bring up even the most degraded people, like Lord Shiva, you know, trying to bring up the most degraded fallen people, Lord Shiva's very glorious. So we don't necessarily, like Lord Chaitanya, he used to go to different temples in South India that were temples of Lord Shiva. Like when we went, like in, we went on our South India yatra, I went a few years ago, and we visited many temples where Lord Chaitanya went to, where Lord Shiva was there. And he went, offered his, you know, respects to show us that we don't worship Shiva as God, but we go there, offer our respects. You know, he's such a great personality that we go there and we offer our respects, try to get their blessings. Because that's how we actually make advancement in Krishna consciousness, is by getting the blessings of great Vaishnavas. And that's really what Krishna consciousness is all about, is somehow getting the mercy. So we don't, see what we don't, the thing is we don't have a lot of, the reason why we're not making advancement in Krishna consciousness so much is because we don't have very much faith. Because we don't have very much, we don't have very much faith because we don't really want the mercy of, we don't want Krishna's mercy, we don't want the mercy of devotees. Because in order to get the mercy of Krishna, we have to really, really want it. We have to pray for it, we have to beg for it, we have to cry for it. We have to really, really want it. And because we don't really, really want it, we don't have any faith, and therefore we're not making advancement in Krishna consciousness. So I remember Gaura Govinda Maharaj, one of his, he was saying that he opened a temple in Bhubaneswara, and he was saying that he said, we have now opened a school for crying. So we've now opened a school for crying, because that's what the whole process is meant to bring us to a point of, is just crying out for the mercy of Krishna. You know, sometimes devotees think that if I just get into, like, if I, you know, I make an arrangement where things are kind of comfortable, I'm regulated, I do my routine activities, and over some time it becomes very mechanical and you just kind of go through the motions. You made your arrangement, and then if I just keep doing this, then I can go back, can perfect my life that way. Of course, that's not exactly how it works. Actually, over time, you're supposed to come to a point where you're supposed to realize that, wow, this, I really want to know Krishna. I really want to serve Krishna. I really want to love you. You know, I really want to love Krishna. You know, there's this point where this mechanical thing is very unsatisfying, and you just need to go further, make it, you know. So, like, Krishna forces you to come to a point where you just have to cry out and beg for Krishna to, you know, please, I want to serve you and I want to love you and just. So we most of us probably won't learn that lesson. I mean, I don't know if I've learned that lesson, but I've heard like this, that we probably won't realize that until many, many years or very, very long time of doing like mechanical practices, that it's actually very, very painful to perform devotional service mechanically. If you do it year after year after year after year, and you're not getting very much taste, and you're just doing things kind of mechanically, it's actually very, very painful on one's consciousness and everything. So it's, you're like forced to have to cry out. It's the only way. Anyway. Okay, that's all I have to say. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Yeah, Luke?
Offer respects to before taking Purukkuram. Do you recall this?
Vaguely. I don't remember the details. I vaguely remember. Isn't it at the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
I can't remember, but it's something about like Lord Shiva. One role is he's called as the guardian of the Dham.
I don't remember all the details about that, so I can't say much. I know that there is one temple though that shows a picture of Krishna going to, I don't know, was it Krishna going to pray to Shiva or something, going to pray to Shiva about right before the battle of Kurukshetra. So Krishna went to go get the blessings of Shiva or something before the battle of Kurukshetra, or something. There's some temple in South India or somewhere that depicts this. So I mean, I don't know the pastime, but even great person like God himself goes, like Lord Chaitanya went to go get the blessings of Lord Shiva. Sometimes people say that, or I guess Lord Ramachandra also went to, like, I don't know, worship Shiva or something. So sometimes people argue, well, oh, that means Lord Shiva is superior, that, you know, Krishna and Ram are going to seek the blessings of Shiva. Of course, our understanding is different. Krishna kind of defeated Shiva in a battle. So, I always use that every time someone asks me who's, you know, if there's any kind of debate whether who's superior, Lord Krishna or Shiva, I always bring up that battle because I think it was just kind of cool. Well, it's pretty obvious that Krishna is more powerful. Anyway, Rock Talk.
Hare Krishna. It's been said that Krishna becomes a servant to his pure devotee.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Yeah. Right. Right.
He's yeah. Superior.
Right. Very good. Thanks. Okay. Anything else?
Many times, like I have. Many times, like I have found that people argue over this point that, different demigods have their own like literature. Like Lord Shiva is having Shiva Puran, and like it's described him as the like most superior or something. So those who are worshipping Lord Shiva, they like. Debate over this point that he's the most powerful. It is mentioned in this literature, and like they don't like